Earth, sky.
Discovery, as the workhorse of the fleet after the Challenger accident, enabled human beings to venture beyond the bounds of Earth and reach out and make discoveries that were far unseen before we began our venture into space.
You're listening to Charles Bolden, the head of NASA and a former space shuttle commander who led four shuttle flights. This is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Bolden spoke with Jorge Salazar just hours after the final mission of the space shuttle Discovery. He spoke more about his memories of piloting Discovery and about the legacy of the space shuttle.
Administrator Bolden, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
Great to be with you.
Now, the space shuttle Discovery has been retired with some amazing numbers, 39 missions in 27 years, sending hundreds of people into orbit, over 5,000 orbits for Discovery. What are your thoughts on the Discovery mission?
I thought the last mission, STS-133, was just absolutely incredible. It was a flawless mission that had two space walks, the first of which completed the installation of or the construction of the U.S. segment of the International Space Station and allowed us to put extra supplies on board that will help the station continue to be functional through 2020. So it was just an incredible mission. We could not have had a more beautiful day at the Kennedy Space Center for the landing, and the landing itself was flawless.
And I'd like to tap into some of your memories, Administrator Bolden. I understand that you were a part of one of the first missions for a space shuttle Discovery. And also, one mission in particular that I want to ask you about is STS-31, which you piloted. And this is the one that launched the Hubble Space Telescope. What do you remember most about that mission?
You're absolutely correct. We deployed the Hubble Space Telescope in March, April of 1990, and for me, it was my second flight. I was the co-pilot, or the pilot in NASA parlance, on a five-person crew. Our commander was Air Force Colonel Lauren Shriver. As I said, I was the pilot, or PLT, as we call it, our mission specialist number two. And the primary arm operator, or remote manipulator system operator, was Dr. Steve Hawley, who was actually flying his third mission to space, and had been a member of the crew of the inaugural flight of Discovery in 1984, August of 1984. Our two other mission specialists were Kathy Sullivan, Dr. Kathy Sullivan, who was America's first woman to do a spacewalk, and then Captain Bruce McCandless, Navy Captain Bruce McCandless, who was also an experienced spacewalker, had flown the manned maneuvering unit and had done a number of historic things, but also was one of the people who had been with the Hubble Space Telescope since its inception.
So what did it feel like to fly on that mission? Why do you think it's interesting? What do you remember most about it?
Well, it was an incredible mission because all of us on the crew, and I think all of us on the Hubble Space Telescope team, we had no idea what a difference Hubble was going to make. We just knew in our gut that it was going to be a historic mission. It was going to leave an observatory in space that was going to revolutionize the field of astronomy and the study of our universe. It turned out that some of the more memorable parts of the mission were deploy day, when we had to deal with what seemed like certain failure, when we pulled the space telescope out of its berth in the payload bay of the shuttle. It's a huge instrument. It weighs about 25,000 pounds on Earth. It's roughly 45 feet long and 15 feet in diameter, and which made it just fit into the payload bay. So we went through a long, meticulous process of lifting it out of the payload bay with the shuttle's remote manipulator system. That was supposed to take us a matter of simple minutes, and it took Dr. Steve Hawley and me a little bit more than an hour, because the arm performed in some ways that were slightly different than we had seen in our training. We finally got Hubble overhead, poised in position to start deploying its appendages. The high-gain antennas went out with no problem. The first solar array deployed with no problem. And about 16 inches into the deployment of the second solar array, suddenly it stopped. The irony of this was our very first very last simulation, full-scale simulation on Earth prior to the mission was that this was the failure that had been put in by the simulation team that required us to take Bruce McCandless and Kathy Sullivan, our two spacewalk crew members, and put them out in the payload bay where they manually deployed the solar array. That was something we really did not want to have to do, though. And here we were in real life faced with the possibility of having to do that. Long story short, we finally determined toward the end of the day that it was a software problem. A young engineer from the Goddard Space Flight Center sent a signal to remove the effect of one of the software modules. The solar array deployed as it should have, and we finally released Hubble, but many hours after it was supposed to have been released. So that was my most vivid memory from the flight, although it was an incredible flight and now left what is just an absolutely extraordinary observatory in its orbit in space.
Yeah, it's been the Hubble Space Telescope has been a fantastic instrument for scientists. And but what did it feel like, you know, to be on that shuttle and to see Hubble into orbit?
We had a very special feeling that we were a part of something that would be incredibly historic. At the time, though, we were just normal shuttle crew doing our job, trying to make sure that we got Hubble successfully and safely deployed and that we didn't damage it in the process. And as it turned out, we were able to do that. When we came back to Earth, since it was the ending of my second flight, then I was relatively well accustomed to what reentry was going to be like. It was as thrilling as ever. Got an opportunity to fly just for a few seconds before I gave the controls to Lauren Shriver, the commander, who actually did the landing of Discovery, and we landed at Edwards Air Force Base as it was planned for us.
Now, I'd like to ask about your first flight that was prior to the Hubble launch. Discovery was the go-to spacecraft in NASA's return to space a couple of years after the Challenger disaster. What do you feel was on the line with this mission?
Well, when Hubble flew STS-26, which was the first flight after Challenger, we all knew that, you know, we were running a risk. We all felt confident, however, that over that 2.5 to 3 year period of time, working with industry, working with ATK, in doing some redesign of the solid rocket boosters, flying a totally new configuration, changing the way that we communicated within the agency, that was perhaps the biggest change. It wasn't a mechanical change, wasn't a manufacturing process change. It was a change in the way that we operated and managed things inside the shuttle program, where we communicated much more openly. Everyone had a voice, and people spoke up when they saw something. So we were very confident that we were going to have a successful mission, and it did go off flawlessly.
Yeah, and there was a lot riding on that mission. It was almost 3 years since the disaster when Discovery went up, and I imagine that was probably were you nervous?
I think we're because I'm always nervous before a shuttle mission, and I always have been, whether I was flying on it or just watching. We're always nervous with every mission because you know what you know, but you don't know what you don't know. And in this business, which is very risky, you're always nervous that there may be something that you didn't know that will come up and bite you.
Now, one thing that people listening do know is that NASA will retire the last two active shuttles, Endeavour, which is I think as we speak is being wheeled out to the launch pad, and Atlantis by mid-2011. People have asked EarthSky, what's next? What would you like to say?
Well, what is next for NASA in terms of human spaceflight immediately is continued operation on the International Space Station. Space Station has been approved for continued operation, continued utilization for the next 9 years. 2020 is the deadline, that the international community has agreed to right now, but we're trying to certify it to 2028. So we continue to name American crews who will join their international partners on the International Space Station at least through 2020. For the immediate future, they will travel to the International Space Station the way that they have been for the last few years, which is aboard a Soyuz spacecraft, and they will return to Earth aboard that same Soyuz spacecraft. As quickly as we can, we will transition to transporting our American crew members aboard American-made commercial spacecraft, that we will buy the service for getting our crews to and from orbit. And then as we do that, we'll also be developing a heavy lift launch system and a multipurpose crew vehicle that will enable us to continue our quest for exploration beyond low Earth orbit. And this time we want to go beyond the moon, eventually to an asteroid in the mid-2020s, and during the 2030 timeframe, actually have humans in the Martian system.
Administrator Bolden, may we step back a second and reflect on the big picture? I'd like your thoughts on the question of why should humans go to space?
Well, the number one reason that I go to space, or I want to go to space, is because it's in the humans. It's a part of the human species. Humans always want to know what's across the next mountain, or what's beyond the ocean. And space is an ocean, and it represents a challenge to us. It represents an opportunity for us to find things that we never believe. You know, we did not know anything. NASA's new, our most recent vision says, we reach for new heights to reveal the unknown, so that what we do and learn will make life better for all humankind. So that's why we come to work every day. A more simplistic reason for why we should go to space is because there are countless things to be discovered there that will make life better for us here back on Earth, as was demonstrated through the Apollo program, the shuttle program. Every time we expand human presence beyond Earth, we learn things that make life better here. The International Space Station is the anchor for our future exploration. It's our new moon. And on the International Space Station, we will continue our efforts both in science and technology exploration, where we'll discover new things about the human body. But even more importantly, we'll develop technologies and develop things like pharmaceutical products that, again, will make us a more vibrant nation, make us much more competitive in the international marketplace, and help us to develop the types of technologies that will enable us to go on beyond low Earth orbit, back to the moon, onto an asteroid, and onto Mars at some point.
This is my final question. Administrator Bolden, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with us. What's the most important thing you want people today to know about the space shuttle discovery?
Oh, boy, that's hard. I think if there were any one thing, and there are so many I would like for people to remember, but I would love for people to remember that discovery as the workhorse of the fleet after the Challenger accident enabled human beings to venture beyond the bounds of Earth and reach out and make discoveries that we were far unseen before we began our venture into space. That discovery was the vehicle on which many firsts occurred. It was the vehicle that carried the Hubble Space Telescope to orbit. It was a vehicle in which we flew the first person of color to do a spacewalk, the first woman to be a pilot and then to be a commander. It was a vehicle that was full of firsts. But what was even more important was it was a vehicle in which we followed up every one of those firsts with seconds and thirds and other things that continued to make our world better.
Administrator Bolden, thank you for speaking with us today.
Boy, thank you so very much. I enjoy it.
You've been listening to former astronaut Charles Bolden, the head of NASA, from his office in Washington, D.C., To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, come to the subscribe page at earthsky.org. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.